Do you do Tai Chi, yoga?
I do. I studied Tai Chi for years. We're a sort of Tai Chi family.
How long did it take you to learn feel that you were
It took 6 months to learn the 108 movements.
Okay. Because I'm about to embark myself.
Well,
I
just, it depends what style you're going to learn, because there's more than one style.
Right.
Yang style is what I learned, which is the classical 108 movements.
And
the movements report, but it's in Y-A-N-G.
Okay.
Because it's in three sections. You learn first part, then that takes you a while to get it. Once you've got that, some of it goes into the second and some of it goes into the third, but the sequence is different. So what you have to learn is the sequence.
Right.
So you get the whole flow of 108 movements. Yeah, I did it for years, actually. I did that in Pakua. Then I joined the police, and that sort of put the end of that. It sort of went out the window. But I do yoga, too.
I relate to anyone who has had a struggling period in their 20s, as I did. And I think that's good for a person to taste that and, get a little perspective and appreciate,
Yeah, it grounds you.
But I love the story about the 5 years here. I mean, that must have been ghastly.
Yeah, well, I wasn't, completely alone, but I knew that it wasn't right, that I was wasting my time and my youth being here in L.A. at that particular period, and that there was more to me than the life I was in. I went to college, but I was sort of hanging around.
Northridge.
So, Northridge, yeah.
Right.
And, I just sort of got stranded here and then stayed here. I suppose a less courageous person would have gone straight back to the UK, which would have been logical for me, like back to the scene I knew and gotten another gig with a band, but it wasn't me.
What was your scholastic focus during
music? Classical
right?
music.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. No, I was all like, the inner curiosity, the music, the quest for music, and so I went to college and did that for the next 4 years, and then that sort of ended, and then, I was like, now what? Until I finally realized that I should go back to the UK. Well, here we are.
You look at movies that were shot in this, the late 60s. This is the late 60s we're talking about, early 70s, right?
Early 70s, yeah.
This is a much more attractive town now than it was then. The air was dirtier.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
It was kind of a bland kind of...
Yeah, it was nothing then.
Yeah,
way better now, yeah. People don't even understand that about L.A.
But everybody I speak to who lives in London, they feel more affection and excitement about the way London felt spiritually and the way it looked architecturally back in the 60s, 70s.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I feel like I've had the best of both places. I had the best of London because, I sort of went to London in the mid-60s and started my career there playing bands. And, of course, it was incredible. And London looked differently. It was much gutsier and seamier, and Soho was amazing, all that. There were all the record shops and all the little hole in the wall places. It was more like Victorian or Dickensian London. And then I ended up in LA, which is like fucking Las Vegas, something like Nevada or something. I had a sort of different life then, and I lived in Laurel Canyon. So the thing then was, it was the 60s and there was the whole California, peace, love, and brown rice time. So,
where were you in Laurel Canyon?
Huh?
What street were you on?
I was up in Laurel Canyon. God, I can't even remember. I could find
Lookout
it.
Or,
somewhere. No, I wasn't on Lookout. I was close to it, but I lived there. Yeah, amazing. Laurel Canyon.
Did
it was the place to be in the world.
Right?
Sorry, do I have a crowd?
Stills. Graham Nash.
They were all right, yeah. I met a lot of them, yeah. I got on stage with Stephen Sills at the Whiskey and played with him one night.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
He reminded me many years later, I think I either turned up at Crosby, Stills and Nash or he came to the police, but yeah, we did meet.
Did you know Mitch Mitchell?
Yes, because we used to play in the clubs in London together. Yep, I did know Mitch.
Pre-Hendrix, you knew him?
Yes, I knew him pre-Hendrix. Yeah, that was amazing. It was this old drummer that was playing with his... Sometimes with Georgie Fame and other people, and suddenly he was with Hendrix.
He was my semi-landlord.
Was he?
Up on Franklin Avenue in the late 80s.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he came out here and never left.
Yeah.
Never really ran into him out here.
Maybe. I think we're getting a theme here. British musicians come to Los Angeles, a sense of ennui, I gotta get out of here.
Maybe, you know, because I came here in my early 20s, and so, I hear, maybe, and my wife is where we met, and so there must have been some, I've often wondered, why the hell did I end up in LA, but I think I was meant to, you know. Mm. I love California anyway. You know, I sometimes pine for the UK, but I think what I pine for is something that's not there anymore. London's not like that anymore.
I feel it too, yeah. Just as a visitor, just since...
God, that's
kind of... I don't want to sound like a cliche, it was better in the old days, but it does feel like a less
it's
intriguing.
Very touristy now, very multicultural. I mean, the whole thing is so different. Yeah. I still have a house there and I go back, but I don't...
Is your home far away from London, or the British home?
No, it's in London, it's in Hampstead.
Right in?
Yeah.
That little beautiful home that I see?
Yeah. No, that home is here in Santa Monica.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's in Santa Monica.
Okay.
I didn't know you had a place in London.
Yeah, I do.
I'm going to start using it when I go there. Thanks. Mm.
Right. You were talking about some choice things. Every film, particularly documentaries, have choice elements that just don't serve the tight narrative. The obvious remedy is extras on the Blu-ray DVD. Is that going to happen?
Yep, there'll be some bits on there that we didn't use in the movie.
Okay.
And then on the DVD, Andy said it does a commentary.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
For it as well.
When did you guys do all this work before, I presume, right?
The commentary we did very recently, actually.
Yeah,
a
few weeks ago.
A month ago. And I think we're still sorting what other kind of additional footage and scenes will be on there as well.
There's another... music-related documentary that is similar to yours, and it's called The Wrecking Crew, about these session musicians who flourished big time in the, actually starting around 64 or so, and moving into the late 60s, early 70s. They did a lot of the tracks that a lot of the musicians got, or just let people assume they did, but they didn't do them. Like, remember the Association? Anyway, what's in common is that they were basically an 07, 08 film with a lot of, rights issues. Now, you guys, this is basically, it centers around the tour. Your book came out in early
06.
06?
06, yeah, no, October 06.
Oh, okay. So why, I mean, you know, I understand, you know, you got to get the cut right and everything, but we're talking like 6, 7 years.
Yeah, there
why
were.
Not just, why not push it along a little?
There were numerous issues, some of which are to discuss and worthy. No, no, not rights. No, just financial issues, creative issues, timing issues with Andy's other projects. So there was a lot of shocks.
You guys have were on the same page. Cut-wise, did you have disputes? I mean, that would be a natural thing, obviously.
Yeah, I think so.
I
think the process, this was a very, it was a long process, as you noted, but always a friendly one. I'm an unabashed fan and very respectful of sort of what I think his desires were, what I understood them to be with the film. I think we developed a good yin and yang along the way, where it was like, oh, that's a good idea, or, but a good...
Conflict is good, man.
Right? Conflict is good.
Excellent.
That's certainly worked for. Certainly
you get a better result. Yeah.
I mean, if the police hadn't been the conflicted group that they were, do you think that the albums would have been?
Right? No, I think it's a very important element you can't take out. The conflict leads to that kind of chemical tightness that we certainly needed. It makes all the great rock bands. You don't want three mellow guys. Like I always like to say, we had to have that conflict. Each guy really pushing for his. His idea and his place. So you reach a place where the music gets tough, stripped to the bone, and that's what we were looking for. Yeah.
I read that Zanyana Madara was done in Holland because of tax purposes, because it was cheaper. Is that the reason? But you didn't mention that in the doc.
Well, it's a sort of boring fact, but I mean, it was done for tax reasons. I think by then we had been basically advised to get out of the UK
Our
accountant, who went to jail not too long after that, but he told us to get out. I mean, it's a weird setup that was allowable in the UK that, you perform your services outside of the UK for a company that's registered abroad, and you're only allowed back in the UK for 60 days in any one year in that period. Mm. And we all left. Mm. I think I
went. You're on tour anyways.
We're on tour most of the time anyway. You know, I went to live in Ireland. So did Sting. We both went to Ireland.
Where did you live in Ireland?
I lived near Kinsale in Western Ireland. Well, Kinsale, it's outside of Cork.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know that area kind
Do
of
you?
Well. I know a little town called Knocklong. That kind of a Black and Tans, 30 Black and Tans, riding to hounds. There's an old Ryan family.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah. Yeah, I was there. We had a house there for 3.5 years, yeah.
Huh. I met the most beautiful traffic policeman in Cork. I was illegally parked, didn't realize. And he came up and said, excuse me, do you think you might be parking there for very much longer? I said, well, I get the idea maybe I shouldn't. He said, well, you might want to think about moving on because, he just basically explained, it's not really legal.
Right.
And if you want to serve your best interest,
That's brilliant. Yeah, that's the way.
If the world could use more of that, yeah.
The Irish are great. I love Ireland. I love going back there. Yeah.
So you, there's a rock, a film about, a narrative film with Al Pacino about an errant father, Danny Collins. Have you heard of
it? I have heard about it. I haven't seen it yet.
It's the cliche of the crazy, eccentric rock musician. They ignore their kids. And they come back later in life. Well, I know I wasn't that great a dad, but maybe we can hang out. And the routine is the kids all say, "Fuck you," who are, you don't get back in like that.
Yeah.
Your relationships are
absolutely great.
Totally great. Mm. You were not there a lot, but you were.
Well, I was absent from my daughter, who's the oldest of the three, and then with the two boys were born. Post police, so that's when I came to live in LA, whatever reasons, and moved to Santa Monica, and it was so much easier to bring up kids there, and of course it was brilliant. Mm-hmm. It was actually a very good move, that, so now I've been totally with them, always. Yeah.
Nice.
Now we have a very tight family.
They're dead ringers for them.
Yeah?
A dead, unbelievable, I mean, you could not pick them out of a photo of a young Andy. You couldn't tell which, I mean, both of them.
If that cut that you were talking about in 2012, the woman was asking you about, by the way, mm-hmm. I was just looking online. It shows at a festival called mm-hmm. New York Doc,
yep.
NYC Doc.
Mm-hmm.
So why, if you guys were not quite there yet, why did it even show there? Because it got reviewed by the Hollywood Reporter?
Again, I think that was something, a choice by our financier at the time.
They were anxious to get it out there.
I don't know if they were looking for feedback or looking at potential distribution. Again, we went through a lot of changes along the way. So, again, starts and stops. Just how it went,
Okay.
Boyhood took 12 years to make, so why shouldn't we take 9?
God, I love that film.
I'm kicking myself because when I first went to New York as a journalist, a very hard-struggling journalist. I lived 12 blocks from CBGB. I could have come and seen that set you guys did in October.
Probably could have seen a lot
was
of great sets.
Is there any way I can get a...
Well, there seems to be
that.
A little bit of... in the film, there's a little clip.
Right,
somebody shot something, which has always been amazing. I don't know who did that. But, we played... It was the first gig of the tour, and I believe it was the last gig of that three-week tour that we did. We did it twice. By the time we got back, we felt like, okay, now we're the police,
Yeah.
And it was sort of a different deal. We did it two times, but, it was only probably half filled, I think, the first time we played there.
Yes, yeah, I could have gone
oh, you could have gone. A lot of people claim to have been there, far more than were actually there. It felt great to us. We were so happy to play there. And it's a total shithole, it's just...
It's gone.
Part of the great
gone now, right?
Yeah, it was just a grimy little filthy little,
Yeah.
But it got kind of enshrined.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very important.
At that year, that particular year, was when Frank Rodham must have been casting Quadrophenia and figuring out
that's
that,
because
right. It came out in 79.
Yes.
How did he happen? I never heard the story, because I never really knew you guys until I saw Quadrophenia. That got me going. About, and I said, who's that white-haired, insane-looking guy?
Yeah.
Did you guys know Frank Rodham personally?
Well, no, it's funny you should mention it, because now that I think back what you've jilt of my memory is he was around in New York.
Okay.
And, you know, we were suddenly like, everyone was like, who are these guys? You know, you know, already we literally had nothing going on except people were noticing us. And thing is, I don't know if this is the connection or not, you know, Sting's wife was an actress, Frances Tomalty, and she had an agent who also picked up on Sting, a woman called Pippa Markham.
Okay.
And Pippa Markham.
Markham.
And so there was a little bit of sort of, you know, that stuff around Sting, you know, via his wife and just the agent. And, you know, he was a young, likely dude, you know. And I guess the word must have gone out of Frank Rodham. I remember him in New York. I remember Sting going off, well, I'm going to go and see this Frank Rodham guy. And that was the first hints about Quadrophenia coming, which, you know, he became the star of the film. And he's only in it, like, for about, you know, 2 minutes. He's hardly in it at all.
Yeah.
He was called The Face. I mean, the star is really Daniel, a little kid, who's brilliant in it.
He's wonderful. And
wonderful.
Ray Winston, too.
Yeah.
Ray Winston plays a rocker.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, the media were picking up on Sting, you know, this guy in this rock band, this good-looking guy who can sing, you know. And he sort of got all the action in the tabloids in England. And Phil Daniels, right, didn't get it. Sting sort of overstarred him, which was because Phil Daniels did a brilliant performance in
Actually,
that.
It's a really good film.
It's a good film. It is a good film.
I just got it on the Criterion Blu-ray.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I must get it and watch it again, yeah.
Really?
I remember we all went to the big opening red carpet night in Leicester Square, and, you know, because we were still coming up, and suddenly he's in this film, and it's the police, and we all go to this red carpet, and everybody, the fucking paparazzi, then it's all going nuts. And it was immediately, we went, you know, we jumped up a few more rungs because of the film. So it didn't hurt.
What was that term you used, the referring to you guys all going blonde to blonde?
Bleach boys. Yeah, stupid.
That's good. At the party for Quadrophenia, I met Ray Winston, and I was with two women that night. Just a
congratulations.
As one is, yeah.
Congratulations.
And he says, you know, you've got two going, man. You know, what do you think? Can I move? And I said, sure, man, have at it. You know, she's with me. But the, and he was very impressed by that. He says, that's really nice, man. And, you know, put the arm around me and everything. See him like 25 years that he remembered because of that one moment at the party when I generously said, try your luck.
Yeah.
Well, when you have a nice moment with people,
yes,
it stays. They remember.
Yeah. Ray Winston, oh, he's had a good career.
Solid actor.
What's the really great one he's in now?
Yeah. It all started for him with Sexy Beast.
Sexy Beast, brilliant. That first scene.
Yeah.
Isn't that insane?
Yeah.
So great. No, he's a very good actor.
And the last scene with Ben Kingsley is dead.
Yeah.
And the Beast is kicking at his coffin or casket.
Right.
And Kingsley looks up at him and goes, takes a drag on a cigarette, scratch it black. Beautiful.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
What do you not do that you could do before, but what have you said no to in life?
What you mean, like playing or?
No, food, just things to keep feeling good, you know, healthy. What do you not do? What have you said no to? Candy bars? What?
Well, you know, I think you walk the middle path, as it were. You know, you know, of course, all these temptations around. I can't say I've led a completely exemplary life, and you can go with that where you will.
Do you still enjoy your wine?
Yeah, starting to go away from it a bit. I'm finding even that's a bit much at this point. You know, it's got to be pretty light these days.
I mean, look, for 91, he looks incredible. I mean, this is...
Yeah, God.
He's got to have something.
No,
something,
you know,
secret.
I mean, I mean, I think one of the thing about getting a bit older is that you can't quite do all those things that you used to. You know, I lead it.
You can, they just hurt more.
They hurt more, yeah. No, you know, I'm probably, I don't know about you, but I play tennis. I work out a lot, I go to the gym twice a week, I work out, play tennis. You know, I do.
And you play all the time?
I practice, yeah, I play the guitar all the time.
Yeah.
Not, you know, 12 hours a day, but, you know, I play every day. Yeah, I definitely, there's not a day goes by where I don't practice. Now I'm practicing drums, which is great fun, and that's in the last 2 months. I even have a drum teacher, and I'm really enjoying it, you know, because it's physical and mental, but, you know, and it's completely natural for me.
Real drums or the electronic drums?
Well, I have both. You know, I have real drums in my studio and an incredible Roland electronic drum kit, and I have a little electronic drum kit at home that I play through headphones, but I've got all the drums.
Okay.
So that's thrilling, and I could have been a drummer, but who knew, you know?
It's not too late.
Could you guys get closer together for a quick...